Welcome to episode one of the Radix Copycast. Here we'll be discussing some of the current trends and issues in B2B technology copywriting. I'm Emily.
I'm Fiona.
And today we're going to be talking about email marketing because there's still too many bad habits out there. And we're also going to have a look at video because apparently 2013 is going to be the year of video. But first, email. As a tactic for marketers in B2B, it's been around a while. It's been around a long while. It's been around before social media. This is the emphasis here as a direct way of getting into people's sort of field of attention. But despite the fact that it's been around a while, that people still got so many bad habits. I mean, what's with that?
and I think with email, reports of its death have been greatly exaggerated.
Yeah, but people are still using it. People are still opening emails.
Absolutely. I mean, I can look at my own inbox and you can look at your inbox. And anyone can look at their inbox and you know that email marketing is still alive and it's still going on and people are still using it. But are they using it to best effect? And often, we don't know. And as copywriters, one of the things that we find is that we don't often get feedback from our clients on which of our email campaigns have worked. So quite a lot of the time we're working in the dark as regards, you know, what are the best subject lines to choose? What are the headlines that we should use? What are the calls to action that are actually going to get people to click through? And you, Emily, you found a really great piece of research from just before Christmas by a company called Adestra, an email marketing company, which actually answered a lot of those questions, which has been really useful, and I'd recommend it to anybody to have a look at it. And what they did was they analysed 1.15 billion B2B marketing emails, which is an incredible number of emails. And they looked at what subject lines worked, what kind of words worked in the subject line to get people to actually open the email. Because there you're completely relying on copywriting. You're not relying on anything else other than the copy that you've got in your subject line. So, I mean, for us it's incredibly important to get that right. And what things don't work that don't get people to open the email. And it was actually really surprising, some of the findings that they came up with. Because you hear things like, oh, you shouldn't use currency symbols, you shouldn't talk about money in the subject line. You shouldn't use the word free because that will get it caught by spam filters. And what this research revealed was that if you talk about money and you actually use currency figures, that's really good. That will get people to click through. In fact, that's the top thing.
It was something like for pound signs, if there was a pound sign in the email, there was a 25% increase in click-throughs. Dollar signs, a 15% increase in click-throughs. It's like,
that's right, yeah. So I guess from our point of view, if you've got something that you can say to the recipient that shows them the true financial value of what you're offering, then using that actual financial figure in the subject line is something that will encourage them to open. Using the word free, while it's kind of been shown that it doesn't really get caught by spam filters, it also showed that people don't really open emails that have got free in the subject line either. So you can use it, but it doesn't work very well. Some of the other important things that came out of that research was that you have to show the benefit of what you're offering to your audience. It's no use talking about your own product or talking about your own company or saying, oh, we've got a webinar, we've got a white paper. Those don't seem to work. It's can you show the value of opening the email to the recipient? So interesting stuff for us to think about and for our clients to think about as well.
It's not just the language involved, though. It's the length of language, because with the fact that emails are increasingly being opened on mobile devices, there's limited space. So those subject lines cannot be long because people aren't going to see the full thing. So you're looking at less than 40 characters potentially say you should open this, go on, open it, please open it. And it's quite surprising still the amount of emails. Like, I mean, personally, like how I've got Outlook set up on my PC, let alone on my phone, I don't have the subject lined area very big when I've got my previews going through. So it's kind of like, well, you could have several lines worth of text potentially explaining what the subject line is, or you could not, and you could just quickly get to the point.
Yeah, and this was interesting as well from the Adestra research, because it showed that very short subject lines work, and quite long subject lines work.
Anything in between.
But anything in the middle didn't seem to work. But certainly for mobile, we're going to be looking at doing short subject lines, because I know I've got a BlackBerry and I literally only have 5 or 6 words of the subject line there to look at. So you've got to get that benefit across in the first, 20 to 40 characters, I guess. Yeah. But it was interesting to me that really long subject lines worked as well, because it's not something that I've considered as a tactic before.
I suppose it's a degree of intrigue, though. If they've gone on for that long, it's like it would have. If it's that long, if it's long, then it's had the chance to say something, whilst at the same time potentially be mysterious. Whereas the short ones are like straight to the point, and of course that's where your whole sort of like added value kind of statement comes in, because it's like, this is the value of opening this email.
And the difficulty, I think, with B2B, where we work, and especially in B2B technology, is actually explaining the value of what you've got within that very short, within that very short character count. Because as this report also pointed out, there's a lot of jargon, there are a lot of very long words in B2B technology. Mm. So it's how do you get it across in the shortest, most economical way possible. So really interesting stuff for us, I think.
But going back to the mobile side of things again, it's not just the subject lines, it's when you actually get into the email. A lot of emails drag on before they actually get anywhere near a call to action for you to actually enact on. And it's just like, well, if you're looking at a mobile, certainly scrolling through text, apart from that, there's a little bit of extra data that you've got to download if you're not on Wi-Fi. It's kind of like, well, you obviously clearly want me to do something. Where is this something? I'm trying to scan through this whilst I'm doing a dozen different things. Where's my call to action? Obviously, you know, the user isn't thinking like that, but that's essentially, they're looking for the benefit, and that's what that CTO is meant to be.
This is something that we think about a lot, and I do think it's really important to get the call to action as far up the email as possible before you've lost the reader's interest or they don't understand what it is that you want them to do. But at the same time, you've got the challenge of, you know, you have to set the scene and explain to them why they might be interested in doing whatever it is you want them to do. Why might they want to watch this webinar? Why might they want to download this white paper? So it's a really challenging exercise for copywriters to get that why into like a couple of lines that resonates with your target audience. So it's talking to them about the problems that they've got in a very short space, and then getting to the call to action. So you must watch this, or you must download this. And I think design can work to help with that, because you can have your text, I guess, on the left-hand side of the email, and then you have your call to action in a box on the right-hand side. So it's right there when they see it. So they can either go straight to it, or, you know, you can read the preamble.
But then the problem with the design side is that it's only really applicable if you're accessing the email on the desktop.
That's true.
If it's a mobile device, then it really is a problem. And the reason I keep mentioning mobile is that recent research from Notice pointed out that 36% of emails in early 2012 were being opened on mobile devices. Well, if you look at IDC's figures for the amount of mobile devices that have shipped in 2012... Yeah. That clearly means there's probably, by this point, a lot more emails being opened up on mobile devices. So with the design aspect, you can't think in boxes and stuff, and also you can't think in images. And I get a couple of emails through that are very image-heavy, and I don't even know what's going on, because quite often the sort of like placeholders that you get when the images don't get downloaded automatically on your mobile device are actually quite obtuse. I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And you just scroll down the entire email and it's just blank boxes. And I'm not going to download them all. I'm on a train. I'm on a 3G connection. I have a data limit. I'm not going to download all your pictures.
Yeah.
I think one of the worst ones is the emails that get sent out. Not B2B ones, but a particular B2C one for a comics app that I use. And it's just one great big image. And I use Gmail for that. And Gmail does not automatically download images. Mm. I'm just like, oh, there's some kind of sale on. I don't know what it's for. Because it's just a great big image.
Yeah. So you're automatically alienating that whole portion of your audience if you're going to do it.
And actually, the amount of email programs on mobile or desktop or web browser that don't automatically download images, there's quite a few. And so you may have you know, a load of images in your email, and it may look pretty when it's displayed properly. You've got a whole bunch of people actually opening these emails, and they don't know what the heck you're going on about because it's all contained within pictures that aren't there.
So do you think we might be returning to the days of text-only emails as we go back to mobile devices?
I think so, because... And also, it's actually a security aspect as well, because images and email, there are security issues, and the fact that you can sort of trace back various things from whatever data you're feeding into, depending on how the email's been sent out. And it's kind of that's one of the reasons why it's set to not automatically download on desktop and browser-based emails. The mobile, it's the data issue, the data size. But on other ones, it's a security issue because it can reveal things if you download the images. And it's just like, why bother? Sure, you could have maybe a nice little header image that's there, but the content needs to be actual written content to explain what's going on.
So this is quite good news for copywriters.
Of course.
Quite good news for us if we're returning to the days where emails are going to rely predominantly on the text that are in them.
But we're saying, you know, mobile, you need to think about the fact that you've got less space and also the fact that images aren't displaying, but also the fact that you just need to get quickly to that call to action.
One thing that I was going to say, which I've seen as an interesting tactic, and I don't know if anyone else is trying this, but I've seen Fast Company, it's a US magazine kind of concerned with technology, cool startups. They send out an email newsletter, which is like a roundup of articles that they've published that day. And I've noticed them in their subject line talking about one of the articles that they've got in their email newsletter. When you click through to it, it's not the top one. So you have to scroll down through all of the others to get to this article
that's
interested you to open the email. So you go past all the other calls to action as well before you get to that. So I just wonder if that's a good tactic.
I don't know, it depends.
Or whether it's slightly deceptive.
They would have to find out whether or not it's frustrating people at all.
Yeah.
Do some A-B testing.
Exactly.
That's something we wish people would be doing.
That is something we definitely wish people would be doing, yes. Thinking about our clients, I mean, we can't improve as copywriters until we know what works and what doesn't.
Yeah.
So we would love it if more clients, I mean, I'm sure they do A-B testing, perhaps they just don't tell us the results, but we would love it if more of our clients tested out different subject lines, maybe different email layouts.
And
different lengths, and then came back to us and told us what tactics worked and what didn't, because then we can incrementally improve the service that we provide.
Next up for this episode, we wanted to discuss B2B video in 2013, because it seems to be becoming an even bigger thing, perhaps maybe a fad as big as infographics have been in 2012, but it does seem to be that people are taking far more attention to it now, because it's just a great way to package in some information and make it interesting, at least if you're doing it right. What are your thoughts?
So video is something we certainly saw our clients doing quite a bit more of last year. So we were involved on quite a few video script writing projects as part of a wider video production project with our clients, which was great fun, quite interesting. And all the research does seem to point to the fact that there's going to be more B2B marketing videos this year. Just with the ubiquity of YouTube and Vimeo and just the fact that a lot of people respond far better to visual content than to great swathes of written content like your traditional B2B technology white papers and case studies. I would say that we will see a lot more video work this year.
Yeah. I mean, I think the fact that when we're not talking videos here that are like 15 minutes long, we're talking just a couple of minutes, a handful of minutes, and distilling information about a product down to a level that obviously A, explains it, but B, explains it in a way that shows a benefit, obviously, again, to the potential audience for engaging with this the service or the product that the video is about.
Yes, and I think one of the important things about video is that it's relatively expensive. I mean, if you're going for a kind of professional production, you're going to be paying up to, well, we had some quotes from video companies the other day. We were looking at a 2-minute video for a client, and we had a quote for full CGI for these 2 minutes, which came to around about 30k. So if you're going to be investing that amount, and obviously there's a whole range of costs, and a lot of videos are going to be nothing like that amount. Mm. But if you're going to be investing quite a lot of your budget into video, you need to be absolutely sure that it's a video that people are going to watch right through to the end. So especially if your marketing message comes right at the end of your 2 minutes, you need to be absolutely sure that you've engaged your audience and they're going to stick with this video right to the end to get to your message. Otherwise, you may almost have thrown that money away.
Well, it's not even just making sure that people come to actually stay around for the call to action. It's not just that, because actually, if you've spent that amount of money producing a video, one would hope that it's of it's interesting enough that somebody might actually like to share it with similar minded people, so that the message spreads socially. You know, you want people talk about it on Twitter or LinkedIn, or, you know, just even emailing links to people and actually, you know, having them discuss it. You want it to actually make an impact, or else, yeah. I mean, we're not talking that a video needs to necessarily go viral. That's a whole different case. A B2B video doesn't need to be viral to be successful. Because clearly, a B2B video doesn't have an audience that's potentially millions, like, say, the main viral hit of Ashley, which was Psy's Gangnam Style music video.
Yeah. We're never going to get to a billion views for any B2B technology marketing video.
Yeah, exactly. It's on a table. But if you get, like, a couple, you know, if you've got a couple hundred views or something, that's actually, when you think about the size of the pool you're dealing with, that's actually probably quite good. So we're not talking viral hits, but we are still talking about something that people will pay attention to, that they'll at least share it amongst people that are within their organisations, so that, you know, you want somebody to share it, you want a developer to share it with their CIO, or vice versa.
Absolutely, and I think to make it shareable, it either has to do, well, it has to do one of two things. It has to be really, really useful to your audience, so that they want to share it with other people who might have the same problem that this video helps them to overcome. Or it has to make a kind of emotional connection, that people really love it and think, this is great, look at this, this is fantastic, and want to share it. And I think certainly in the technology industry, in B2B, we haven't really been very good at making that emotional connection with the audience. Because the B2B technology purchase hasn't really been considered as a kind of emotional, you know, we love this brand, we must buy from this brand purchase. It's been a very kind of rational, logical decision made by a kind of committee of people. So it is bringing about a new way of thinking in B2B as well. It's like, how can we make that emotional connection and create something that people feel really engaged with and want to share?
I mean, I think certainly in the case of technology sort of B2B videos, that there is perhaps a case for series rather than one shots, just because you could slowly show the progression, but at the same time not take up people's attention for too long. So I mean, because obviously if you try to disseminate the information for a lot of products in one video, actually when you think about it, you're talking about a very long video, extremely long video. But if it's a series, then you've got the opportunity to give people the option to watch it on their terms, because if it's a long video, then they've got to sit through all of it, and trying to get back to points, if they have to stop and start, it's going to be hard on them. But yeah, when it comes to technology videos for B2B, I do prefer series.
Yes, and it seems to also play into the buying cycle that we have in B2B technology, because it takes a long time for companies to make a decision to invest in a large piece of enterprise IT. So you do need to keep people engaged over that whole, it might be sort of months, it might be a year. So creating videos in a series is a way of keeping people engaged, I guess, and bringing them back, and keeping that brand recognition going throughout this decision-making process.
I mean, if there's perhaps something with tech, like one killer feature that you could essentially make a video on because it's something that it does really well, then okay, you could perhaps do a one-shot. There's a particular video by one of our clients that I really liked, which talked about a security feature that they had, and it was just one video. It's the only video they'd done about this feature, and it was about And it was a bit bizarre, and it was about passwords and trying to remember passwords. And I just loved it. Because it was just one video.
I think I remember the one you mean. Yeah. That's with the guy who's being forced to remember his various passwords for various things. Is that right?
Yes.
And he was sort of being slapped around the face and tortured.
And if he got it right, he got a bite of a donut.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. And I think one of the other good things about that video is it was very short.
Yes.
So it got the point across in less than a minute, I think.
Yeah.
Which I think is an issue, again, I mean, it's what we were talking about with email as well. It's like, how do you get across the message in a very short period of time? Because you can start rambling on with video.
Mm. I mean, I've seen a couple of ones for B2B technology where it's... it is a series, but also the videos are quite long. We're talking over 5 minutes each. And the dramatisations of potential customers on the company's part and what's going on with, like, their IT departments and stuff. And it tends to kind of... like, we're looking at 5 episodes overall, and if you're looking at 5 minutes each per episode, that's, like, that's 20 minutes... No, let me think. 25 minutes worth of video... Yeah. For you to watch through in order to get the whole picture. And if you haven't watched any of the previous episodes, because it tends to feed off each episode, then you don't know what's going on. So that, I think that's an issue, is length, and also making sure that if somebody comes across one of your videos later on, they can actually understand what's happened without having to reach through everything else.
Yeah, and you have to make them want to watch the others.
Yeah.
Because if they watch one and it turns them off and it's not interesting and not engaging, they're not likely to watch any of the others in the series either. So once you've got the whole series there on YouTube, if one's no good, they're not going to look at the others. So it's finding ways to engage the audience, make them watch to the end, and if it's a series, want to actually watch the others in the series as well. So I think from our point of view, as copywriters, this means that we're learning and using new skills because we've been doing some dramatisation.
Yes.
And we've been thinking about how to tell stories around our clients and around our products that engage people and draw them in. So we've been looking at... how to use a 3-act structure to tell a story where you set a scene and you have a sympathetic character and a hero that people identify with. So you would turn your hero into, or you would model your hero in the mould of your potential customer so that they engage with that. And then you have to have them go through a series of challenges and difficulties, and finally they find the solution to their problem, which is obviously what your client is offering. But turning that into a story can be quite interesting and entertaining.
Also, unlike regular fictional media, the balance between the acts is a little bit different in for B2B, because the third act in film, in regular films, is actually the shortest act, and it takes a long time to get to, whereas the act two is the longest. But actually, in B2B video, you actually want act two to be a bit shorter, and then act three to come in as soon as possible, but then not be too long. It doesn't make up for the missed length of act two.
Well, you do have to squeeze these entire three acts into about 1 to 2 minutes.
Mm.
So it's quite an interesting challenge. It will be drawing on some of the skills that some of our people have here. For example, you've had formal screenwriting training, which I think will come in very useful over the next year as more of our clients do video.
I'm just trying to think of some examples of videos that I've liked. So other than donut eating, I think because I was rewatching one of our clients' videos recently, the Network's First Dinoverts videos. I watched through the playlist of them if they just check them. Apart from the fact that they're actually only a couple of minutes each, so it's not too stressful viewing. Yeah, it's quite short. They did manage to do a 3-act structure, and there was and they had the roles there. There was a protagonist, there was an ally or mentor, and there was a villain, an antagonist. Yeah. And they managed to fit this into about 2 to 3 minutes per video, which was quite good.
So this was a series of videos that an agency that we work with, Marketing Options, had done for a company called Networks First, who are a managed network services company. And I think deservingly won the B2B Marketing Award this year for best limited budget campaign, because this was a great example of how you can produce an engaging video that tells a story, draws people in, brings them onto the next videos in the series and makes them want to watch them, all for relatively small amount of money. I think they're all produced for under 3k each, and basically told the story of a kind of hapless network manager and his boss and the CEO of the company, but who were all portrayed as plastic toy dinosaurs.
Yes.
And very engagingly done, and all filmed on a complete budget. So filmed on an iPhone, I think, at somebody's house, with
plastic dinosaurs.
Yes, with plastic dinosaurs and people doing the voices of the dinosaurs. And it's the sort of thing you think, oh, that's never going to work, because it's so low budget that how is this ever going to work? And it's the sort of thing that it turns out that this works absolutely beautifully, because it's so warmly done and it's funny and it's engaging and it gets the message across really effectively. That deservingly won that award, and I think it's a great example.
It also really empathised with the roles that were in there, the situations that people working as like a networks manager might have to put themselves into.
Absolutely.
Or be forced into, actually,
yeah,
as a result.
So it shows a real understanding of the situation that the potential customer's in, and really plays to that in a funny and warm and engaging way, which is why it works.
That's it for this episode, but you can find out more information about the topics we've been discussing on our blog at radix-communications.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at radix.com. Thank you for listening, and see you next time on the Radix Copycast.